Maybe you remember back in 2010, the British chef Jamie Oliver did a TV series about Huntington, West Virginia. It had been named the unhealthiest town in America. Well, in the series, Jamie set out to change how the entire town ate, especially targeting school lunch. Well, sparks flew, dramatic television happened, and hosannas were sung to healthy eating. Well, Jane Black, a reporter for the Washington Post, tracked that story, while her husband, journalist Brent Cunningham, became intrigued by it too. They wondered about the aftermath once the cameras were gone, and a bigger question. Does the so-called food movement of local, sustainable, organic, and healthy have any impact on most of the country? Well, Jane and Brent are writing a book about their 7-month stay in Huntington. Jane, Brent, welcome.
Thanks so much for having us.
Yeah, good to be here.
So this is what I understand. You two, Jane, you were tracking what was happening with Jamie Oliver's project, the 2 months he spent in Huntington. And Brent, you were interested in it as well. And you two wrote a book proposal just before your wedding. And when you came back from your honeymoon, you had a contract. And so you went to live for 7 months in Huntington.
Right.
So what did you see as the aftermath of the Oliver Project?
Well, people in Huntington across the board were very interested and concerned about what he was doing. But the place that the show focused probably the most was in the schools. And there he sort of went in and, you know, was shocked and horrified that they were eating breakfast pizza and what he called luminescent strawberry milk. And he tried to get them to start cooking from scratch. He said it didn't really matter that the food met the guidelines of the USDA as far as nutrients were concerned, but it wasn't fresh. And of course, what people saw on TV was the school lunch ladies being furious about this and feeling like he was stepping on their toes, and the kids taking those lunches, which are paid for by taxpayer dollars, and dumping them in the trash. What happened in the aftermath was really interesting because after he left, they were audited by the USDA, who came in and said, well, these meals may be fresh, but they don't meet our requirements for nutrients. And so the head of school food, whose name is Rhonda McCoy, basically could have gone back to the way she'd always been doing everything. And even though on the show she came across as this cold, aloof bureaucrat, clearly the message had gotten through. And what she did over the next summer was redevelop the recipes, change the flavors a little bit, for example, taking some of the garlic out of his garlicky greens so that the kids liked them better. And, you know, within a year, they were basically cooking all their meals from scratch. And I went down there, and I have to tell you, in this kitchen that any New York restaurant would be happy to have, there were 10 cooks making chicken, rolling it in a spice blend, baking it in the oven, taking potatoes, cutting them up, putting them in olive oil, and roasting them in the oven. The meal that I ate there included a salad that had lettuce from a student farmer. It was incredible. And what's even more amazing is that since then, Cabell County, the county that Huntington is in, has trained, I think, 52 of 55 West Virginia counties to do the same. And I would say West Virginia, which is not known as a very progressive state, probably has one of the best school lunch programs in the country.
So the kids are eating the food.
Absolutely. I mean, look, high school kids are never going to say they like school lunch. It's not cool. But they ate it. I didn't see a lot going in the trash can. And having reviewed my fair share of 4-star restaurants, I can tell you it's pretty good.
That's great. I mean, that's really the goal of that project, right?
Absolutely.
But you two talk about the fact that you see a much larger problem behind school lunch, the obesity problem, all the and the health problems that we have in the country.
Yeah, I think we put a lot of pressure on schools to fix all our problems, but I'm not so sure that's the right way to think about this. And I think more broadly what we found in Huntington, and my connection to the place is I grew up an hour from Huntington and I went to college there, so I know it fairly well. Mm-hmm. But it's a largely white working class city. It's where the Rust Belt and Appalachia meet, and for the last 40 years it has struggled to figure out what it is in the post-industrial world. And you have an audience there, people who aren't necessarily poor, they're certainly not rich, they have some disposable income. In other words, they have the wherewithal to use their time differently and to make different choices around food, but they don't see the importance of it. They don't see the value of it. And I think this is what people who want to sort of fundamentally change the way food is produced and consumed in America are going to have to confront going forward, because there are a lot of people like that around the country.
There's something that's always bothered me. It's that business about we know best. We know that local is better, that organic is better. And, you know, it's pretty arrogant when you're on the other side of that.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I think we should just make clear that both Jane and I are part of that movement. I mean, a lot of our friends are activists and chefs and food evangelists, all these sorts of things. But what I think happens is you're talking to people who have a whole different set of priorities when you get out into a place like Huntington. And yeah, I think there's a certain resentment of people on the coasts or people who are perceived as sort of urban elites telling you what to do, whether it's, you know, what to eat, how to drive. I mean, the whole country is sort of enduring an anti-regulatory period. And so this sort of gets rolled up into all that, and it becomes sort of part of the culture war. Mm-hmm.
And I think what you're picking up on, Lynn, is this moral tone.
Right.
And I think that, you know, when you look at the history of attempts to change the way Americans eat, you know, back to Sylvester Graham in the 19th century, it was always a moral crusade, and it never worked. Because people don't like being talked to like that. And so what we argue for and what we think is really important is to sort of take that piece of it away and help people to understand, you know, why they want to do it, not why they should do it.
A big thing that we talk about in the book is that the messenger matters. And there's a lot happening in churches around the country with food and diet. And
really? I didn't realize this.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And not just at liberal congregations, although, as you would expect, that's where it began. But it's spreading to conservative churches. The church in our book is an evangelical Baptist church. And the pastor is a fairly progressive guy in a lot of ways. He's the son of a United Mine Workers official. And he really sees this as sort of a class war. Mm. And this is still a very religious country. I mean, again, in New York and, you know, perhaps in Minneapolis and St. Paul and urban centers around it, it's sometimes hard to remember that, but it's a very religious country. And the pastor has a lot of influence where people like us, Michael Pollan, you, they wouldn't listen to necessarily. So I think that's one way that you start to make this important to people.
To some extent, some of this is all perfectly obvious. And yet what we find frustrating is that the leaders in the food movement continue to batter us with these grim statistics about the environment and our health and obesity, and it's also miserable and awful and doom and gloom, without realizing that the people that they're trying to reach are just tuning out.
Yeah, even if it's not a situation where they don't believe it, it sort of gets lost in the flurry of daily priorities.
And, you know, we have a 2.5-year-old. So when we were living in Huntington and cooking all of our meals from scratch,
we
didn't have a 2.5-year-old. And boy, does that change everything. You know, the amount of time and energy and planning and skills that it requires to ask Americans who are used to inexpensive and convenient food to do that is just not going to work. And so we, along with talking about messengers, you know, we're very interested in how we can make healthier food that people like to eat convenient. I mean, we're all for frozen foods, not full of junk and unpronounceable ingredients, but good frozen foods that you can pop in the microwave and feed your kid for dinner. There is nothing wrong with that.
And to the extent that the movement makes you feel like there is something wrong with that, that's a real problem.
A really interesting take and a valuable one. Thank you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jane Black and Brent Cunningham are authors of a forthcoming book on the real effects of the food movement and Huntington's efforts to change the way it eats.